Thanks again, worship team and Ryan and our EV guys and everyone who spent so much time, our teachers, servers, to put into the service to make it what it is. It's good to be together on a Thanksgiving Sunday. How many of you yet have some turkey to eat? Yeah. What's that stuff called? Tryptophan? It's the stuff that makes you tired. What? So we are week number two into the story. And I want to give you a brief recap. Yeah, last week was a little different. If you weren't here, Dr. Jim Mason came from Christian Ministries International. Unfortunately, our live streaming service cut out, so those who are trying to watch online, it's not us, it's them, but we don't have video for that, but we do have audio. If you missed it or you want to listen to it again, you can order the CD at the back or check out the MP3 on the website. Great start talking about creation and evolution and all those types of things. But let me give a little recap of where we're at in the story. So again, whether you read the chapters before or after the Sunday, that's up to you. You'll likely go back and forth. And whether you purchase the story resources or not, there is a reading list at the back, and you can read in your regular Bible. If you would still like to pick up some story resources, by all means, there's an ordering form at the back, and you can order that. And hopefully we'll have it in by next Sunday. So God creates the world. Humans are its greatest creation. It's his love. It's his passion. When he says everything's good, he looks at humanity and says, this is very good. Above everything else, even angels, human beings are God's crowning achievement. There's crowning creation. He gives us perfection in the form of a garden where he dwells with us and he walks with us. And he says, look, everything's yours. You rule this world under my authority, but I'm giving you the authority to do that. You can do anything except eat the tree from this, eat the fruit from this tree of knowledge of good and evil. And eventually, Adam and Eve, the first man and woman, they do that. They sin. They're tempted and they sin. And God casts them out of the garden, not because he's cruel or mean, but if they were to eat from the second great tree, the tree of life, that would have been a very bad thing. And right away, God could have come the very next day. God could have come the very next day and restored everything. But instead, he puts in motion this grand narrative, this story of his pursuing us, because we're still his prized possession. We're still his greatest possession. It's a terrible word. We're still his greatest creation, and he loves us dearly. So as people multiply, as families grow, the hearts of people become wicked. And there's no one left on the earth except for one man and his family named Noah, who even knows of God and worships him at all. So God is heartbroken. That's literally the words that are used. God is heartbroken and sorry that he ever put this all in motion. And so he's going to start again, and he sends a flood. And all except for Noah and his family and two of every kind of animal perish. They all die. And after Noah arrives on dry land and gets out of the ark and distributes all the animals, God says, I'll never do that again. I covenant with you, I promise with you that I will never flood the earth again and destroy everything. And I will seal that with a sign of the rainbow every time from then until now and in the future we see a rainbow. It's God's promise that I, even though I'm brokenhearted, even if people become utterly wicked again, I will never, ever do that again. The world continues, people multiply on the earth, many again turn from God, but some worship and follow him. Generations after Noah, a new adventure begins. You ever been called to an adventure? Have a look at this.
Good morning.
What do you mean? Do you mean to wish me a good morning, or do you mean that it is a good morning whether I want it or not? Or perhaps you mean to say that you feel good on this particular morning? Or are you simply stating that this is a morning to be good on?
All of them at once, I suppose. Can I help you?
That remains to be seen. I'm looking for someone to share in an adventure.
adventure. Now, I don't imagine anyone west of Bree would have much interest in adventures.
Nasty, disturbing, uncomfortable things. Make you late for dinner.
Good morning.
The world is not in your books and maps. It's out there.
I can't just go running off into the blue. I am a Baggins of Bagend.
You are also a Took. Did you know that your great-great-great-great uncle, Bulrora Took, was so large he could ride a real horse? Yes, well, he could. In the Battle of Green Fields, he charged the goblin ranks. He swung his club so hard, it knocked the goblin king's head clean off, and it sailed 100 yards through the air and went down a rabbit hole. And thus the battle was won. And the game of golf invented at the same time.
I do believe you made that up.
Well, all good stories deserve embellishment. You'll have a tale or two to tell of your own when you come back.
Can you promise that I will come back?
No. And if you do, you will not be the same.
So that's a couple scenes from The Hobbit, came out last year. Part 2 comes out in a couple months, written by J.R.R. Tolkien, a follower of Jesus. A narrative and a story helping us to understand what it means to live an adventure following Jesus. Have you ever been called to an adventure? All great adventures begin with an invitation. They begin with a call. Now, all of us have a general calling on our life, to follow Jesus, to love one another, and to love the world around us so that they might follow Jesus too. That's all of our calling. The Bible is full of general callings, but each one of us has a specific calling. That's the interesting thing about following God. He cares both for us as a group and as people, but he cares for us individually. The Bible says the hairs on our head are numbered, and he gives us each a specific call. Now, I have my own unique calling in life. Not everyone's called to live the life I lead. In fact, no one's called to live the life I lead. I'm the only one called to live the life I lead. But there are small callings throughout my life. So there's usually a larger calling where God says, you know, here's an occupation or a spouse or a place you're to go. But within that, sometimes we have these smaller callings. And as a family, we've uprooted 3 times to go to different churches. And each time, there was some issues with whether we should go or not. And we were scared and what would happen to our kids in schools. And sometimes we were planted quite nicely, just like Bilbo Baggins. Like, we are set, we've got the school and church family and everything set up the way we want, but yet God continued to call. And he called us by name and said, will you go? And each time we did, and we couldn't see it at the time and we didn't know it at the time, but God was waiting with blessing when we arrived. Each and every time, we couldn't understand what God was calling us to, but he offered blessing long before we would ever receive it. Blessing is not something to be earned. God doesn't wait for us to obey, to be faithful, to do things in the right order, and then he blesses us. He says, look, I have a great life for you. I have an adventure. I have blessing waiting for you. And the way you receive that is through faith and obedience. Abram was the great, 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 great grandson, 9 greats, of Noah. And he heard God's call one day. You see, God speaks to him. There's no organized religion. There's no church. There's no 10 Commandments, no Bible, none of that. People who followed and worshiped God in those days, it was purely hearing God's voice and passionately obeying. And Abram hears God, and God gives him a great call. He calls him away from his homeland. He traveled about 1,500 miles before he arrived, as he went here and there and had a few mini adventures. But let's look, if you've got your Bibles with you, Genesis chapter 12. Abram's call. Genesis chapter 12. And if we're going to understand anything about Abram, we have to understand his call, because this sums up his whole life. This is God's call on his life, what he was to do and where he was to go. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous. You will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed, and Lot went with him. That was his nephew. Abram was 75 years old, 75 when he began the journey. God is constantly calling. We are never done. Stephanie and I were joking the other day. Someone asked us, you know, about what time we might retire, and we just said, as most of our generation, probably never, right? So Abram departed at the age of 75 when he left Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all of his wealth, his livestock, and all the people he had taken into his household at Haran, and headed for the land of Canaan, which would eventually be known as Israel. You know, you'll find a recurring theme as we go through the story, as you look at the Bible. God often chooses the least likely people, and he almost always chooses the most difficult method to see his plan come about. Almost always. And I think there's purpose in that. It's first and foremost to remind us that this whole story is his, right? It's his story. He authors it, but he invites us to be central to the plot. And we are characters in his story, but it's first and foremost about him. But secondly, it's so that we can't claim any of the rights or to brag or to say we've made this happen. God makes sure that we know when God's involved, it's God. It's not us. And so he chooses the least likely people, and he often chooses the most difficult path. So you see here on the map, the route that Abram and Sarai left. Down here you see Ur, and that's the first trip. He went with his family up to Haran and settled for a while, and then the rest of the journey he traveled just with Lot and Sarai and his household, and these are different little points of his journey that you can look into, and eventually they arrived around Bethlehem and Hebron in Canaan, which would be known as Israel. Now, along the way, they acquired so much wealth, God's hand was with them. And I'm not preaching prosperity gospel here at all, okay? I'm not preaching, you know, God will give you overabundance of wealth if you just follow him. God can choose to do that if he wants. But for Abram, God did this. And along their journey, while they're traveling, they're not planted, they don't have a business, they don't. God blessed them so much that they became so large, the herds were so much, they had so many people, that they had to divide between Abram and Lot. And so Lot chose this valley with these two towns called Sodom and Gomorrah. And things do not go well for Lot there. First of all, surrounding nations band together and the kings attack and they plunder and they take away most of the people, including all of Lot, his family, his household, all his stuff. Abram catches wind of this, and he takes 318 trained men from his household. Just to give you, how many of you are having 318 trained men for Thanksgiving dinner today? Probably not, right? He had a large household, right? So out of his whole household, he's got at least 318 trained men. And they go and they rescue Lot and his family and the other people from Sodom and Gomorrah, and they plunder the people, and they bring all the stuff back. Both all the stuff that had been stolen, and then some. And on the way back, Abram meets this guy named Melchizedek. Now, he is a king and a priest. Remember, there's no organized church. There's no writings. It's just God calling and people passionately following. And here's another guy who's heard God's call, and he's a priest. He's bringing others to the one true God who can only be known by following him. And Abram meets Melchizedek along the way back, and Melchizedek gives him a blessing, as well as bread and wine. How many of you know what foreshadowing is? High school English students, you better be nodding. Foreshadowing, right? Who can tell me what foreshadowing is? Come on, high school students, come on. What's foreshadowing? Somebody, you're all afraid you get the wrong answer. What is it? Come on, it's in the plot, you have foreshadowing. Huh? No? Alyssa, awesome. What's foreshadowing? I'll tell you. Foreshadowing is when an author puts something early on in the plot that will become key later. It's little hints, and at the time, you don't know it. But looking back, have you ever watched a movie twice, read a book twice, and you're like, oh, I never caught that at all. But it's there all along to prepare you. You'll find that in the story. Because God is revealing the end already in the beginning. Already, before we have a church, before we have organization, before Jesus dies on the cross so that we might be forgiven and receive life, a priest is offering bread and wine. And how does Abram respond? He gives a tithe before churches, before teaching, before Dave Ramsey, before any of this stuff, right? He gives a tithe of all the stuff he's bringing back. And he said, this is for God. I'm going to give my first fruits. In harvest, people eventually gave their first fruits. They gave the first and the best back to God. And so he gives that to Melchizedek. And then the king of Sodom says, because you've rescued us, you keep all the stuff. Now here's the interesting thing that Abram does. Not only does he give a tithe of his best and first before he takes anything for himself, he says, you know what, king? I'm not keeping any of this stuff. I'm moving towards generosity, and I'm running away from greed. Because I don't want you to say, aha, yeah, Abram got rich off of us from a wicked king. I allowed him to keep it. Abram said, I don't care what I'll get. I don't care how more rich I will be. I serve God and God alone. So I'm going to give a tithe. I'm going to give this first. See, the interesting thing we see here with the bread and the wine and the tithe and refusing to be greedy and take things through dishonest gain is Abram's already saying, I will follow you. He's already showing character long before churches and organization and Ten Commandments and all that stuff. Because God's ways are not our ways. Why do we give? Why do we give food and money to the church? Why do we tithe? And a tithe is 10%. And eventually in the New Testament, we're taught stewardship. You give on the first day of the week. So it's regularly what you've decided in your heart. It can be 10%, can be more, can be less. The point is generosity. But the deeper teaching is this. And Abraham already had it. Everything he had is not his. Do you know that? On Thanksgiving Sunday, everything we have is not ours. And so we bring an offering and a tithe to the church. So it's always hard to hear a pastor talk about that because there's all this other stuff we bring into that. And are we being greedy and asking for more money? Oh, it'd be awesome to have more money as a church. Not because we could do ministry better, but it'd be wonderful to hire some of these part-time staff more, to be able to do some of the renovations we want, to be able to bless our community, to be able to, money doesn't make ministry. But having a blessing and having money to do some of the things we feel God calling us to, that's a wonderful thing. So I encourage you, this is like the side sermon, give first to God because his ways are different. See, in Abraham, it's not about prosperity. It's not, I will give so that I'll get. It's, I'm giving. If you have a problem giving to the church because of your past history, give to someone else then. Doesn't matter. Abram understood right away at the beginning of his story that everywhere God would lead him is because God would lead him. Everything he had, everything he would ever have, is first and foremost God's. And so he meets this Melchizedek, and he receives communion. He communes with God. He receives bread and wine, and he gives back. And right at the beginning of his story, he's saying, this story is not about me. It's about your story. And as he rescues Lot, Lot comes back and decides, I'm going to, you know, resettle back in my home of Sodom and Gomorrah. Abram can't believe this. And the people in Sodom and Gomorrah are so wicked, it says that God hears an outcry about them. We don't get too much narrative about that, but we can only assume that there are people in that valley and in the surrounding nations who pray to God and say their wickedness is amazing. We can't even believe how wicked these people are. And so God says, I'm going to wipe them out. They've gone far beyond what they can do. And Abram is told this by God and prays for Lot, and God saves Lot and his family, all but his disobedient wife, who doesn't listen to the angel's instructions. You can read that whole narrative, how that goes on. But remember, all these adventures, all this stuff, still in the back of his mind, what's the promise? What's Abraham's calling? Well, Abram at the time. It's to be the father of God's people, father of great nation. He's old. Him and his wife don't have any children yet. So they take matters into their own hand. And they adopt a custom that was familiar to the people of that day and age. And Sarai comes to Abram. Now, remember, this is real life, okay? Wives, put yourself in Sarai's shoes. Can you imagine saying this to your husband? We don't have a son yet. Why don't you sleep with my servant Hagar? And then we'll have a son. Because if a son is born to her, literally that son is considered the full son of Abram and Sarai. That's the way it worked. That was their custom. So Abram does, and they have a son named Ishmael. But Ishmael would not be the bloodline through whom God's people would come. In fact, that would come a little bit later through a son named Isaac. Now, God did continue to bless Abram, and through Ishmael, a great nation is born, the Arab nation. And through his brother Isaac, a great nation is born, the Jewish nation. Sound familiar in history today? That is where it began. Sarai and Hagar didn't like each other. Surprise, isn't it? Surprise. And they just went their separate ways. And Ishmael and Hagar are sent off. So God continues to bless. But rewind a little bit. After Ishmael, before Isaac. Sarai is reminded again that God's going to bless you. God's going to allow you to have a son. She's 90 years old. And what does she do? What would you do? She laughs. Yeah, she laughs. God changes their name at that point of the story. And God says, Abram, you're no longer going to be called Abram, which means exalted father. When Abram was 99 years old, his name is changed to Abraham, which means father of many. And Sarai is changed to Sarah, which is just a different rendering of the meaning for princess. Father of many and princess. And she does have a son, and she names him Isaac. Isaac means he laughs. He laughs because Sarah laughed at the prospect of having a baby at 90. As would you. Don't judge her. Okay? You'd laugh too. But it's really God who's laughing, isn't it? Because his ways are not our ways. God will have his way even when God doesn't have his way. Did you get it? God will have his way even when he doesn't have his way. And he seals the covenant with circumcision. Now, circumcision was something that was common. That's not, sometimes we think that's only a Jewish thing or Anglo-Saxon thing. The Egyptians and other nations were doing that, but God changes it. He says, this isn't just going to be something that is cultural. This is a reminder from now and all time that I am your God, you are my people, and I will bless you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. This is something you can practically do within your households that will be a reminder for young parents that this child is a blessing and that this nation is a blessing. And it's all come from Abraham's faith? No. Mm-mm. No. It's come from God. But it's been received because Abraham was faithful and obedient. Abraham and Sarah have their biological son. They're in the promised land. They don't know it's called the promised land, but they're in the promised land, Israel, and life couldn't be better. And a few years pass, and Isaac's getting older and older. And by the time he's somewhere around 5 to 15, God calls again. God says, Abraham, Abraham. And he responds, here I am. We hear that throughout the story. You'll see that in different people's lives. Calls him by name. He says, here I am. What does that mean? It means I'm available. I'm ready. Whatever you say, God, I'll do. And God calls him to something way more difficult than anything he's faced yet. God asks Abram to sacrifice his son. In essence, he's saying to Abraham, I want you to snuff out your descendants. I know I've promised this to you, but I'm asking you to do something horrible. And Abraham says, I will. And so he packs up Isaac and a few servants. He gives Isaac the wood. He carries the fire. Remember, in olden cultures, they didn't just have matches, flint, or anything like that. They carried fire so that they'd have it when they got up the mountain. And Abraham isn't called to go to some place. God says, you know, venture off and I'll eventually show you the place you'll need to go. That takes a lot of faith. And where is he going? Well, he's going to a place he doesn't know to kill his, not his only son, but his son through whom God promised the nation would be born. That's craziness. Does Abraham know something that we don't hear? What would you be thinking? What would you be? I know what I'd be thinking. I'm out of here. No way. That's crazy. You know, does God agree with human sacrifice? Like, is God okay with this? Just put yourself in their shoes for a minute. Imagine you're Abraham, okay, and you're walking up the mountain. Once you get to the base of this region, you leave your servants, you travel the rest of the way, and you're walking with your son Isaac, and what's going through your head? I know what's going through your head. My wife's going to kill me. Right? And maybe while he's having that self-talk, what does Isaac say? Isaac says, this is great, Dad. You got fire in your hand, right? I'm carrying the wood, which I'm sure as a like 5 to 15-year-old boy, who wants to carry the fire? Him, right? So he's probably being a little irritating. He wants the fire, and then it clicks. Dad, I got the wood, you got the fire. Where's the offering? God will provide it. Was Isaac okay with this? We don't know. We have no idea. We don't know if he struggles through that or if he's a good, obedient boy. He just takes his dad's word. We have no idea. But eventually they get to where they're going. And they build an altar. It says Abraham builds the altar, but I can't help but think that Isaac is helping to build this altar too, out of stones. And eventually Abraham turns and he ties Isaac up, okay? Think through this in real life terms, right? With your son or as a son or a daughter or just as a person. If a family member turns, has a knife, has wood, a fire going, an altar, and they grab you, what you thinking? I'm thinking struggle, okay? I just don't buy these depictions in movies where, you know, Isaac is tied up neatly and he lays down passively. I think there's probably some struggle. And I think for Abraham, it's not just the most difficult thing he's ever done. It's beyond imagination to have to hold and wrestle and struggle with your son and hold him down and say, it's okay. God told me to do this. I know he promised you to us. It's okay. Trust me. I trust God. Maybe he's thinking, on the way home, I better be finding Hagar and Ishmael because I got to bring someone back. I can't come back empty-handed. But he lifts the knife. And as he's ready, I don't know if he's in motion or in his heart, he's ready to go. God says, Abraham, don't do this. And he provides a ram. He provides a ram for sacrifice. God calls him again. The promise becomes reality. I think this is where the story really begins. This is where God's people truly begins. Because the promise becomes reality. Remember, God knows Abraham. God knows him intimately. But what God is waiting for is someone who will respond in great faith and great obedience, through whom a nation would be born? Nah. That's like this much. Through whom all people would be blessed. And so God is testing Abraham. And at the moment Abraham is about to follow through, God comes in and rescues. The promise of a son through whom all people will be blessed becomes real in that moment. Think about it this way. God provides a ram instead of a son. Foreshadowing. Because later in the story, God provides his son instead of a ram. Right? God provides a ram instead of a son because God knows that later he's going to provide his own son in place of a ram. And it's that moment where everything changes. I think that's the pivotal moment where everything changes in this story. From the beginning to this point, it's been God showing his love and showering blessing on his people, and they continue to reject him. But it's this point where one man makes a choice to follow God and walk in a new way. Now Noah did that to a certain extent, but it wasn't through Noah that blessing would come. It's why Abraham gave the best. God chose him because already before church, before Ten Commandments, before any of this stuff happened, before he had a son, Abraham had the faith to give first to God because God would never withhold anything from him. So what are some of the lessons that I've learned from the life of Abraham? You see him on the screen here. There's 9 that I found, but you could probably find more. First one, when God calls, we are given the choice to follow, okay? Every adventure begins with an invitation and a calling, and God calls you. God calls each one of us. Every adventure begins with a call, and when God calls, we're given the choice to follow. He will never make you. He invites us to do that. When God calls, we obey by faith. Just by simply walking. Okay, God doesn't generally call us to extraordinary things. Okay, he calls us just simply to walk in his way. And when God calls, we obey just with simple faith and by walking. Third one, lessons I've learned. When God calls, we obey in small steps. Small steps. Notice the first thing, like God doesn't find Abraham who has a son that he loves, and first thing he says is, will you sacrifice your son to me? No. God unveils his story, and he asks us to get into his story through small steps. Fourth, when God calls, he calls us by name. It's unique. You can't live my life. I can't live your life. But if you don't live your life for God, the world is missing out. Because God has something for you that it doesn't have for anyone else. Imagine how this story would have been different. Because Abraham already chose a different way, remember? He chose a different way already. Up on that hill with his son strapped down, he had already said, I'm not waiting for you, God, I'm doing this my own way, and he slept with Hagar. He already had done that, and God is, I don't know if it was the final chance, we don't know, I'm not God. But God's giving him the ultimate choice to walk in his steps or not. Does God agree with human sacrifice? Well, yes and no. See, the story is not about our sacrifice. When we think of Abraham laying Isaac on the altar, Abraham bringing tithes, Abraham giving back all the stuff so he's not being greedy, we think sacrifice. And yes, Abraham was called to sacrifice his home and leave his family and do all these things. The story is not about our sacrifice. The story is about God, his blessing, his sacrifice, and our receiving that in faith and obedience. So, fifth lesson, when God calls, it's always meant for his glory and our blessing. It's not about us, but it's central around us. First and foremost, when God calls you, it's first and foremost for his glory and then for our blessing. Six, this is basic. God is always calling. He constantly was saying, Abraham, Abraham. I have a sense that probably we don't have every time God spoke to Abraham recorded. God's always calling. God's always speaking. Seven, God's plan is to bless us. Okay? He offers us blessing. It's his plan. He doesn't want us to have a bad life. Now, following Jesus doesn't mean everything's going to go the way you want. You won't get rich and famous necessarily because Abraham did. You're missing the point. That's his story. That's the way he walked. You're called to walk a different way. But you will have the fruit of the Spirit, and you will have God's very nature inside you, and you will be blessed because God promises that. God's plan is to bless us, and he offers us blessing. 8, faith and obedience open the way to receive blessing, okay? Abraham's faith and obedience open the way to receive that blessing. And the final one that I found, you could probably find more, we don't earn God's blessing, okay? We don't earn God's blessing. It's offered and then received. Don't be fooled. God didn't say, thank you for the tithe, thank you for your son, thanks for giving, now I'll reward you, okay? God's blessing was there all along. You've got it backwards if you're thinking that. If you're giving to others, being generous, trying to love others so that God will love you more, so you'll get more stuff or more blessing, or you got it backwards. God is always offering blessing. It's right there. He says, this is the life I have for you. I want you to live an adventure. I want you to live a real life. Because people who don't follow me, they think they have life, but they don't. They're missing it. You're mistaken. All the ads you hear, all the stuff you hear about what life is about is false. You missed it. I'm offering you life. I'm offering you blessing. But blessing is simply received. We receive that as we respond in faith and obedience. So my question to you is this. Have you accepted God's call into his story? Have you accepted God's call into his story? Either by a first decision to believe in Jesus and follow him, to become a follower of Jesus, to become a Christian. That first decision, that's where it all begins. If you've watched The Hobbit at all, eventually Bilbo makes that decision and he runs out the door. He decides. He's making a first decision to follow Jesus. But there is a second. It's not about recommitment, rededications, how many times you come to the altar. It's the second to truly follow. Throughout the story, we see many people who make choices that they're all in for God. And there are others who kind of just, they believe and they follow, but they're never really willing to give it all. And that's my challenge to you. That's my invitation to you this morning. If you've never made a first decision to believe in and follow Jesus, that's where you begin. If you don't know what that's all about, talk to me. I'll wait around after the service out by the coffee. But maybe for you, it's a second decision. Maybe you believe in Jesus. Maybe you follow him. But you're not experiencing life. That's what this whole weekend conference is all about, to help us understand what that's all about. And I invite you to make that decision, to say, here I am. Because God is always calling. Maybe it's not to move like our family has done, or Abraham left and did all sorts of stuff. Maybe it's just simple things. There's always something that God is calling us to start or stop or change or wait. What is that? What is? I don't know. I can't tell you. But the Holy Spirit is telling you right now. So what I want to do as we close is I want to reread through Abraham's call and put in our information, okay? Genesis 12, 1 to 4. The Lord had said to, okay, insert your name, okay? Abram, leave, okay? For you, maybe it's start, stop, choose, wait for a change, okay? The Lord said to me, start, stop, choose, wait for a change, you know what it is, native country, or leave your comfort zone, or whatever it may be. Your relatives and your father's family, and go to that person or place, a thing that calling God is saying, you need to start or stop or change or wait, and you need to do it in this way or go to these people or do this thing. I'm calling you to this because I will insert the promise. What is God promising you? I will go with you. I will make sure you. I will take care of. I will bless you. Insert the promise there. I will make you into a great nation, he says to Abraham. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. That's all of our promise. You will be a blessing to others. Through you, others will come to know Jesus. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. That's our promise. All the families on earth, insert your family and friends, Think specifically. Who will be blessed through your calling, through your faith, through your obedience, but through God's story? Who will come into God's story because of your life? All of them will be blessed through you. So Abram departed as the Lord instructed. I'm going to ask Andrew up to close us in prayer. But before we do that, I want to close with this. One more thing. Okay, I want us all to stand. And what I want us to do is to just say this out loud, and then Andrew will close us. I just want us to put our name in the eye. Because what I want from the story more than anything else is at the end to hear this. So Jeremy departed or left or started or changed or stopped as the Lord had instructed. That more than anything else for this whole ministry season, that's worth it all right there. To have each one of us be able to personalize and say, I heard God's call and I departed and I followed. So let's just say, we'll just say departed. Maybe you're not called to leave somewhere. But instead of I, let's say our name, and Andrew will close us in prayer. Ready? So Jeremy departed as the Lord has instructed.
Let's pray. Father, I just thank you for the words that Jeremy has brought this morning, which have really stirred my heart. Father, a key word has been journey. And that's a good word to think about today. What journey are we on? Are we journeying for ourselves, making our own plans, finding our own way? Are we like Abraham, giving all, sacrificing all? Nothing mattered to him but being on the very journey and only the journey that you had set before him. Or are we somewhere in between, trying to journey with you, losing our way, stumbling? Father, you said clearly in your word, when we stumble, we will not fall. For you know the intent of our heart, Father. And for those who are struggling and stumbling to find the way and to find the path. So my prayer this morning is the light would burn brightly. That each of us would be clear about the path that is before us and the journey that we are to be on. And then we're in a position to choose. Will we follow that path? Will we follow that light? Will we follow that direction? Will we follow that word? Will we follow that calling? For sometimes it will be easy and sometimes it will be difficult, and there will be sacrifice and price to be paid. And we get to choose. But though the darkness closes in, yet I will say, blessed be the name of the Lord. And that's what Abraham did. For the day he knew he was to sacrifice Isaac. Surely that must have been an incredibly dark day. The sorrow and the agony, perhaps second only to Christ's death himself. What a dark day, and yet still he said, blessed be the name of the Lord. This is the path, and I will not deviate from it. This is my journey. So I pray, Father, that we would know the path and walk with the determination of Abraham. And oh, the blessing that followed. This is my prayer this Thanksgiving Day. And Father, in all of this, our hearts are thankful for knowing you and for being able to serve you, for the incredible hope we have despite circumstances sometimes. We do have hope. We really have hope. And that can lift any dark heart. Thank you for this Thanksgiving Day. Our hearts are full in your precious name. Amen. Be blessed, everybody.